Hello, my friends. Welcome back to another episode of the Mental Corner Podcast, the show where I bring on guests from all different backgrounds to talk all the things mental health. I'm your host, Harry Poffin, and today I have the absolute pleasure of being joined by Shivani Agarwal. Shivani is a trauma-informed clinical counselor and art therapist with experience in working with teens, youth, and adults experiencing a range of mental health challenges. Shivani was such a blast to have on, and I really want to thank her again for coming on and having this discussion with me. And of course, if you've listened to the show already before, you know the drill, but if you haven't, please like, comment, share, subscribe, give 5 stars if you're on that podcast platform. Share with someone who might want to hear this episode. It's a really great one, and I can't wait for you to listen. I'll talk to y'all very soon. Have a great rest of your day. Peace. Good to go. Shivani, thank you so much for joining me on the show today.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm so glad to finally talk to you.
I am as well. So my first question for you, like, where does your story begin? Like, what got you inspired to get into therapy and counseling and all of that?
Honestly, I don't think that I knew that I was going to do this or be in this field until I actually started studying it. I feel that it found me versus me finding it. Growing up, I've always been, the sensitive kid or been told to like not cry and, you know, all of that. But then that kind of like internalizes itself into you not like you still feel things. You just don't show them as much. But then, growing up, I was in a few different fields. So I've been in like media, like in film. While studying, there was always a range of things studying, but I always had psychology because it interested me. And then when I was in my master's program, doing counseling psychology, because I always wanted to just study further, I realized, oh my God, this is actually really cool. And if I like it, and I can help people with it. So that's a bonus. Anyway, I didn't feel quite connected to anything else as much as I did to this. And then I think it slowly just helped me find my purpose of whatever I'm doing next and next. But yeah, I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, no, that was awesome. That's so awesome. So before you got into therapy and started discovering psychology, you'll have to excuse me. I'm sweating. It's so hot here in Ontario.
That's okay. It's like 35. Do you have like AC or something there?
Yeah, but it's not really doing much, honestly, to be...
You know what you could do? You could fill up the urine thermos with ice and water and drink.
That's a good idea. Yeah. Wow.
I have mine right here. So. Oh,
I can't believe I forgot it for this recording. Yeah, no, thank you for sending me that. I really appreciate it. I love that thermos thing.
I'm really glad that you do.
Yeah. So my question, to go off of what your story and what got you inspired, like before you got into psychology, therapy and all of that, did you ever have your own personal experiences with mental health?
I did. As I mentioned a little bit, growing up as the sensitive kid, I was also a middle child. So that comes with its own set of, you know, finding your place in the family and growing up in a big I'm Indian, so big Indian family where you are growing up with a generation that is very heavily influenced by Indian traditions, but at the same time finding their own way to move forward, which has a little bit of a mix of East and West. It really puts us all in a very weird position of, am I doing the right thing, first of all, but also really wanting to please your parents and elders and family, but also trying to find a place for yourself. So I did have a lot of, you know, internal battles, and I moved around quite a bit because I went to boarding school quite early. I went there in fifth grade. And so you're growing up with a bunch of people who are also growing up along with you. They are your family and they're not always right. They put you through a lot, but you know, you form some really deep connections. And so you kind of have to figure out mental health on your own. I think we had one school counselor just in name, but no one really went to that person or talked to them because we didn't even know, you know, who do you go to and who do you talk to? So I think everyone's had to figure it out on their own. And then growing up, when I talk to more people, I'm like, why aren't we talking about this? It's so normal and it's so natural for everyone to be dealing with this. And as I got closer to my siblings, I realized that even though we grew up in the same household, we all had very different upbringings or like different experiences of being there. And so, yeah, I think that is, that will kind of influence all of the mental health related things I've dealt with.
Right. Absolutely. Now, did your older sibling, what brother or sister? Did you have an older brother or sister?
Actually, I have both. I don't know why. I feel like a middle sibling because my older brother's quite older than all of us. So we have a huge age gap. And then, so by the time, you know, he had moved out, like that's when we were growing up. So my older sister, then it's me, and then it's my little sister.
Right. Now, did your older sister, was she in kind of a related field like psychology or anything like that?
No, they're all into fashion. So she's a designer. She's doing really well. Her brand is based in India. My mom is a designer as well. So they kind of went into the same field. My dad does a completely different thing, but I think we're all connected because we all have our own businesses.
Right. Yeah. Now, did that ever give you like any hesitancy to go into psychology, going against the grain? Because I'm the eldest child. So my whole thing was, well, according to your parents and the elders in your family, is that you kind of pave the way. But for the middle child, it's like people almost subconsciously expect you to almost follow. I know my brother felt that for a bit. He was like, I'm not going to follow this guy. But like everyone expected him to. So was there ever that kind of feeling with you?
I feel like my sister's ideal. She does everything right. At least I know on the surface, that's what it seems like. So I can relate to a little bit of what your younger brother's saying, but I don't think as much in terms of profession and career, but more in terms of, you know, I guess family values and, you know, the way that she is and the way that we're expected to be. So, I mean, there's always good and bad of that, but yeah, I've always, you know, felt that I have to take after her, which is, which has helped me create a lot of great values, but also sometimes it comes with that pressure of, oh, look, she's doing so well. She's done this really amazing thing. And then you're like, okay, well, what am I doing? I kind of suck, but.
Yeah. Right. The subconscious. I've honestly, as the eldest child, when your younger siblings are doing better than you, that's the worst. You're like, oh shoot.
You know what? That's very interesting. Cause when I've been doing a lot of my own work, right? So growing up, like she makes a joke that, oh yeah, you used to always cry. And last time I was like, yeah, why do you think that is? Because you used to beat me, like as just like a friend.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then she's like, oh yeah. But I know that every time she saw that, you know, I was getting a compliment, I was doing super well, she'd be like, oh, how do I take this frustration out? But yeah, she means well. But yeah, I'm glad we can joke about it now.
Yeah, of course. I mean, back then it was like the worst thing in the world. You're like, no, my whole life's ruined.
Yeah. Did you do that to your younger sibling? I'm curious.
Was that fight them?
Or like, how did you handle it when they were, you know, being more appreciated or something?
Well, I had a younger brother and a younger sister.
Okay.
So it was very different how we approached it with the younger brother. Like he was only a year younger than me. So we just butt heads and wrestle and fight. But with the younger sister, I think my brother and I kind of teamed up on her and would just like mess with her a little bit. Not like anything aggressive, like what him and I would do. It was like wrestling to the ground, shove your face in the ground. But with her, it's just kind of like getting her super annoyed. But with like the frustrations and stuff, I mean, I don't know. I was a guy who always internalized everything. I tried to anyway. I was pretty bad at hiding it. You could tell when I was upset, but I like to think that I kept it inside. So that was just my way of dealing with it, was to try to suppress it as much as I could. Cause I was like, oh, it doesn't bother me at all. It doesn't bother me. When in reality, it like really, really bothered me.
Yeah. It's absolutely impossible for something to not bother someone. It just, you know, depends on how they choose to show it or not, because I can see, like, for example, my older sister too. I feel that she had a lot of pressure to keep it together and, you know, to like seem like the super tough, if I cry, then what happens to all these like younger siblings, like those type of things, which, you know, yeah, everybody comes with their own burden of that. But I really wish she didn't have to, because, her feelings are super valid.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, I can relate to your older sister, because when my family went through like a big divorce and everything, I felt like I had to be the parent. Like I had to keep my parents fine, and then I also had to keep my siblings okay. And I was like 11. And I was like, I'm going to be the parent. That's that goes over so well all the time, right? Like it's just too much pressure for an 11-year-old. But yeah, it's, I mean, you just try to shove it down and try to be the bigger person. But I'm glad now that you can have conversations like this one where we kind of joke about it. And it's like, yeah, this happened. Because back then it was like, if I show even a tear, this is like the worst thing in the world. I would cry or lash out or anything. And I felt like my world was over. I'm like, now they're never going to look at me the same.
Wow. Yeah, that's a lot of pressure to grow up. And, you know, also because older siblings, I find, I mean, a lot of us do that, but I find that they express sadness through anger, because that's like more acceptable, you know, because they're older and they can, or it's just generally more acceptable. And I'd imagine because you're male, you're growing up in a society that doesn't let males, you know, be sad a lot. So safest way, let's get angry about this. Perfect. And yeah, I'm just gonna get over it. But what do you think about that?
About like what society used to say about it? I think it's ridiculous. I mean, that's exactly how I was raised. I've talked about it a lot on the show, is that I never knew how to express myself because it was just something that was never talked about. And so the athletes I looked up to in like the locker rooms when I grew up as an athlete, they would react like just angrily, like swear at people, punch stuff, like be very, be very down on themselves, like degrading and just swearing at everyone, hating the world. And so I just thought I was like, well, I mean, no one is reacting negatively to what they're doing. So clearly that's how you react when something doesn't go your way. Right. And then it's just, it's one of those things that we have to talk about more, because I know so many people, I've grown up with so many people, I have so many former teammates that grew up the exact same way. It's just this whole generation that grew up, you know, learning from their parents and the people above them. We got to stop that. We got to stop that dangerous cycle.
Yep. Breaking a cycle is never easy.
No, never. Brutal. Now, what for you, like, what kind of therapies do you provide? I saw that you provided two on your website.
Yeah. You know, as you know, with all therapists, we have our own approach, although we are trained similarly, because we all, you know, have to meet a standard of, you know, all of the information that we have and courses that we take. But the way we present ourselves comes to become our approach. So I practice as a narrative therapist. Mm-hmm. And what that means is that, you know, we focus a lot on relationships. So whether that is your relationship with someone else in your life, whether that is your relationship with, you know, your past, your, like, say, anxiety, depression, but most importantly, your relationship with your own self, because no matter what you go through, that is a place where we want to develop healing. We want to develop safety. We want to develop understanding, not so you're like, oh, I love myself like every single day, but so that you understand why you're doing certain things and you create a place of strength so you can, yeah, change what you're doing. And so in doing that or using that approach, I do trauma-informed therapy. So that'll be like, yeah, mainly helping people process trauma. And by trauma, you know, it can be anything. Like clinically we say trauma, but it could be anything that's like even slightly overwhelming for us, all the way to like major life incidents, accidents, and, you know, losing somebody, things like that. It's mainly trauma informed, working with people from age 15 to like all the way up until, I think my oldest client currently is 65. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I have a couple other counselors on my team, and everybody, you know, has kind of their populations of focus. So we work together.
Right. Awesome. How does narrative therapy, how does that differentiate from just talk therapy? Is it similar?
Yeah. So it's the same thing. So talk therapy so it's mainly under therapy. It can be, you know, where you do it through talking, so that's talk therapy, or you can do it through like a creative medium, so that can be creative therapies like art therapy, which is also something that I work with. It can be, you know, movement therapy, like somatic work, like it could be all of these different types of therapy. And then within talk therapy, which is any therapy that we do by talking and, like, you know, sitting in front of someone and exchanging whatever stories, interactions. Under that, there are many different ways we can do it. Narrative therapy being one of them. And so others would be like CBT. It could be basically anything existential. It could be anything that requires you to talk to your client.
Mm. This was a big part of, when I was getting therapy, the hardest part for me was always that first interaction. Because mm-hmm. it just felt like it was never right until it eventually was. Now, for you personally, like, what is your approach that first time you meet someone? Like, how do you effectively build that relationship right from the get-go?
That's a great question. And, because I've been a client myself, I 100% relate. It's overwhelming when you go and tell someone, oh, hey, I want to come in, because of whatever reason, you're being vulnerable right from that moment you say, I want you to hear me out. Not even necessarily, I want you to help me. I just want you to be here with me dealing with what I'm dealing with. And so as, stigmatized as it is, it's a very common thing that everybody will come across at some point in their life. And so for those of you who want to come into therapy, I think the way I handle it is I will just straight up ask them like, hey, are you nervous? Because I was when I went in, or I'll just ask them, hey, what's the first thought that comes to your mind? You're coming in for the first time, or you're coming in like with a new therapist for the first time. Like, how are you feeling? Or like, how was your day? Like starting very basic and simple and really relating to that experience of coming in, I think really helps a lot of people, and also tells them that I'm not this, scary person with like glasses on this big chair sitting and, judging you or analyzing you, because even though I have like a clinical degree, it doesn't mean I don't experience what you experience. And even though we have treatments for whatever you're talking about, those are like, you're not ill or injured or, you're dealing with something that we can work with together, but this isn't, I'll give you a medicine and you'll go and you'll be fine. And you have to listen to me. Otherwise you're going to harm yourself. It's not like that. So yeah.
No, I love that approach way more. I've had therapists who just sit down and they're like, all right, what's wrong with you? I'm like, what?
Oh, really?
A lot.
Tell me more about that, please.
About some of my experiences? Oh my goodness. Which ones do you want to know? There's been a couple that I've talked about on the show. The first time I ever got therapy, and people who have heard the show are probably like, oh, he's on this again. But it was pretty brutal. But I was sitting in the waiting room for about half an hour, and then they called me in. And I was nervous. Like, I was having a panic attack in her office. She wasn't there. Wow. But I was, like, having a panic attack because my whole, idea of mental health challenges, and therapy was that, like, it's for crazy people. So I was sitting there and I was like, oh, I'm a crazy person now. Like, this is me, right? And so I was just panicking because there was I had no education on the topic. And she showed up 20 minutes late or 30 minutes late. I forget which one it was. I just remember it felt like a lifetime. And she came in. She didn't really acknowledge that she was late. She kind of sat down. She gave me the up and down, looked me up and down. She's like, all right, what's wrong with you? And I was like, well, I hate myself. I want to kill myself. And I don't know what to do. And she, again, gave me the up and down, said, okay, wrote me a prescription, said, good luck. And sent me out. And that was first experience with therapy. So that was great.
I am really sorry on behalf of the whole community that you did go through that. But no, I think when you say that, she gave you a prescription, it tells me that maybe you went to a psychiatrist. Mm-hmm. So because they can, write prescription. And sometimes, like, not to say that, your experience was whatever, but like sometimes, psychiatrists, because they do prescribe, and they have been, at least in Canada, I've noticed there's a very big difference and very big line that is, I don't know if it's getting drawn on its own, which it shouldn't, but if you go to a psychiatrist, they just think, okay, we're going to write your prescription. They probably are thinking that you're already going to therapy elsewhere.
I see.
But totally depends from person to person. But yes, that, you know, Of course, it's a scary experience, no matter whether you go to a psychiatrist or psychologist or a counselor, you're still going there for help. So, yeah. Right.
Well, I mean, and there goes my lack of understanding at the time, right? Because I literally just booked with the university I was at. It mm-hmm. just all fell under the same umbrella. It was like, if you need help with counseling, therapy, psychiatrist, whatever, doctor, blah, 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 blah. It was all under the same umbrella. So I just entered in my info and I was like, I need this. And they just sent me with this person. It's come a long way, of course. I've talked about that as well. But that first year was rough. With other therapists, I mean, I had one guy who just loved to hear his own voice and he just kept talking. And I was like, I haven't gotten a word in yet. Mm-hmm. And then as he kept looking at his watch to make sure that the 30 minutes were up. And then once it was up, he was like, all right, see ya, pay for another session. I was like, what? That's it? I hadn't even said anything. I think the worst part the worst thing I've experienced, and I hate doing this because I've met so many incredible therapists, and the one that worked for me, she was amazing. She saved my life. But I mean, what I try to teach people is that sometimes you have to go through these rough experiences and keep going and find the person that works for you, because if I wasn't stubborn, I wouldn't have kept going, which ultimately it would have been pretty rough. What was my train of thought? What was the last one I was going to talk about? Shoot. I forget.
Yeah. You were talking about bad experiences or tough experiences with therapists.
I forget. It'll come back.
It'll come back. Yeah. But you know, that's why, and I'm so glad you talk about this, because yeah, it's a trial and error, just like in any relationship in your life. You're not, you know, it's not like ask and you shall receive. I know it's a huge process, and even accepting that, okay, I'm going to bring someone else on board to, you know, help me figure this out, that then you have to go and start your search, which is why your relationship with your therapist is one of the most important things that is going to help. In like, it'll basically be the container in which you're going to do everything else. And so if someone out there is, you know, thinking of going to therapy and is intimidated or is not sure if this person is right for you, I just want to remind you that no matter who's sitting in front of you, no matter how many years of experience or degrees or whatever they might have, if you don't feel comfortable, not in a sense that, I don't understand what they're doing, so I'm going to leave, but your gut is going to tell you whether or not this person feels safe to you or not. And you can bring up these concerns to them totally and, you know, get that sorted. I'm sure they'll be grateful. Then maybe take your time and make your decision and, you know, meet a few other people as well. See who fits for you. I mean, I always request, even therapists who don't offer that initial 15-minute chat over the phone or something, I always recommend people like, hey, reach out to this person and ask them if they can, you know, chat with you for 10 minutes. And I've never met a therapist who said no to that. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, like even just over email, like if they can answer your questions first. So you have an idea of who you're talking to and you have power in choosing, you know, who you want to seek out and be with and open up to.
No, that's amazing advice, because I was actually going to ask you earlier, because I mean, finding a therapist, not even just the right one, but finding a therapist and reaching out to them and asking for help is so scary. And I know I'm sure a lot of people listening or a lot of people out there would do it if they weren't so intimidated, if it wasn't such a humbling or a vulnerable experience, I guess is what I'm trying to say. But there's just so many ways to go about it that don't have to be so scary.
Agreed, 100%. In fact, when all of us are training, we all have like an ethical module that we go over, where one of our biggest responsibilities as a mental health practitioner is to educate people, or, you know, psychoeducate, or at least that awareness piece where we are listening with, you know, compassion, or we are telling other people more with compassion, so that, you know, I'm just saying this so people feel more comfortable even asking a question they think is stupid, because they were told their whole life that they are stupid, or they don't deserve help, or, you know, trust or anything like that. Because even if you ask a question and that's, you know, very obvious, you're more likely to get a more compassionate response from a therapist versus anybody else. So ask the therapist versus ask your friend, oh, hey, what do you think my therapist is going to say about this? Or, you know, like, yeah, they could give you that experience, but yeah, we are kind of trained to be compassionate. So just ask us.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. I actually, going back, I remember what I was going to say. The one thing that always bothered me about the first couple sessions of therapy, for me anyway, because I switched therapists every time, like every single, because I didn't feel good with any of them. So I just kept switching therapists. And the problem was, in the area that I was in, all of their strategies were to ask me, like, go from the beginning. And it's a 30-minute session. And so I was just repeating the same chunk of my life every session and not getting to anything. And so that's what really got me, like, annoyed. I was like, well, I'm never going to get anywhere because I keep retelling the same part of my story to like six different people. But yeah, I just remember that being a huge roadblock in me feeling encouraged to ever go again.
Yeah, no, I hear you. So I'm curious then, at what point did, like, you know, because you were retelling your story, at what point did you feel like, okay, well, this is not for me, or this feels like, you know, I have to do it again and again? But was there anything common with why you kept switching?
I just didn't feel
okay.
I mean, there were a couple reasons. The first one, I was so against the whole idea of therapy. I thought I didn't need it. I thought it was for weak people. It's embarrassing to admit that now, but, like, I thought it was for weak people. I didn't think I needed it. I thought it was for crazy people. I didn't think I was that crazy. And I just thought it wasn't really benefiting me. Like, I remember I would go to a session and be like, okay, I feel good. I don't have to come anymore. Thanks. And then, like, a week later, I'm like, oh, I feel like garbage still. Okay, that didn't work. That's stupid. Maybe I should try it again. And then it would just be a horrible cycle. But the biggest part was just the stigma around mental health with men and therapy with men. I felt the weirdest feeling I ever had was going to a male therapist, because I was like, you're so open and so vulnerable. And that was the last thing I wanted to be in front of men when I, when I had no idea that mental health was opening up about this stuff was actually a strength. I was just like, I don't want to open up to this guy. So that was a big reason why I just kept going, this isn't for me. I hate this.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you are reflecting over that, because, yeah, a lot of people, like, you know, we all have resistance towards this, and it does. I think we don't really start to do it until we feel ready. And then, of course, the fit of the person that, you know, you're with. And if you didn't feel comfortable with a male therapist, I'm glad that you switched, because so many times we keep going and sticking to the same person because we feel we should, or that is the right thing to do, or, oh, my therapist will feel bad, or, you know, like, whatever version that we come up with, and to stay in something that doesn't work for us. I mean, definitely have an open conversation about it, but if it really doesn't work, I'm glad that you switched to then find the therapist that you said was amazing and worked for you. What was different about her?
So the biggest difference was that opening session. Mm-hmm. Like, the way you're talking about it, when you go, like, are you nervous talking about that? That would have been incredible. I just loved the approach that you have. But for me, it was, I got in there and I was at a point where, like, I wanted to, you know, end it all. I was like, yeah, I'm only here because my friend dragged me here. I hate everything. And she could tell, like, my body language. And I remember reflecting with her about this, like, in our last session before the university year ended. But that my first time, I didn't even notice at the time, because you're in your head all the like, you're lost in your head. But my body language, my shoulders were in like this. I did not look at her. I avoided eye contact at all times. And I kept my answers, like, one worded. She said I had this energy around me, and you don't notice it when you're in it, which is terrifying. So I was going through that, and instead of her going, because I expected it, right? Instead of her going, okay, where does your story start? And I was like, here we go. All she said was, look, you're not in a good headspace right now. You're not ready to talk. I need you to go, like, get help. I need you to go be alone right now and then go. Sorry, let me rephrase that. Jeez Louise, the heat is getting to me. But she said, I need you to go home and decompress right now. And then I'll give you, here's my number and here's the number of the local hospital if things get serious. But if you start having those suicidal thoughts again, I need you to call me. And just that one little personal, like, here's my number. I was like, I like you. Like, you actually care. Or not that the others didn't, but it felt like she cared, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Totally. And, you know, the way that you perceive somebody caring for you will be based on the story that, you know, based on your story. And mm-hmm. so I'm glad that you found someone that works in your story with you. Because maybe the other people, you know, somebody else went to them, they're like, great, I'm just looking for a pill and I'm happy. Like, you mm-hmm. know, like, because there's a lot of people who do that as well. That's what they understand of therapy. But I'm so glad then that you stuck it out long enough that you found your person, because I promise you there is a person for everyone when it comes to therapists. Like, there is an approach for everyone. It's actually a really, really, really old profession. It's been around for ages and it's been developed to the point where if somebody wants to come in and not talk about anything at all, we can still do, like, for example, EMDR. And, you know, like, there's different types where we're desensitizing someone from a memory. They don't even have to actively speak about anything from that to drug assisted therapies where, you know, we're doing therapies with mushrooms, or we're doing therapies with ketamine, like things like that. And then, to talk therapy, to art therapy, which is, you know, amazing.
Right. Yeah. You know what's so embarrassing is I don't remember her name. It's been like 3 years since I've seen her, and all this whole time I've been like looking through my emails and trying to figure it out. I really wish I knew her name. I just want to go back and see her and be like, thank you.
Oh my god. Yeah, find her. Totally. I'm sure she would love to hear from you.
And okay, University of Guelph, I'm making this a clip I'm putting on Instagram. Look, help me find her. I don't know her name, but she's this really old, sweet lady. I had a question for you, because on your website, you talk a lot about change. And mm-hmm. I know that's something that you personally have experienced with boarding school and all of your stuff. Do you think, and this might be a dumb question, I don't really care, but do you think that when you go from therapist to therapist like that, and you constantly have change and keep having to change the person that you're vulnerable with, do you think, like, is there any kind of negative effects that might have on someone?
That is a very great question, because yes and no. I mean, I think that, you know, if somebody goes to a therapist one time and then goes to another one time, or, you know, two times, unless there has actually been something that they are uncomfortable with being there, or, you know, they've expressed a concern and the therapist hasn't addressed that, or they've brought up that, oh, I'm actually not feeling super okay with, you know, this that happened in session. Can we, because even they deserve like a second, third chance. Like, there's no therapy that, you know, one size fits all. Mm-hmm. And everyone's approach is different. It's just a matter of figuring out that sweet spot so they can kind of tailor it. But if somebody's switching due to the fear of being vulnerable, or due to resistance, or due to, you know, them being worried or thinking that a relationship has to be perfect right from the beginning, I think that behavior in itself is something that needs to be addressed in therapy. So once they do find that person they can stick on to, even for longer than one session, I think that is something they should bring to them. And usually the therapist will ask them, have you been in counseling before? Or what's that like? Because this is something I'll ask people even in my initial phone consult. I'll ask them, have you done this before? And if they say yes, I'll ask them, great, then did you go in for the same reason? Or, you know, questions like, what worked for you and what didn't work for you? Because this is our chance to, even for me, to figure out if you are going to be a good fit for me. Because, yeah, I mean, therapists don't want, like, they don't want to make you uncomfortable, or, you know, just sit there and have you open up and then be like, oh, yeah, well, next. you know?
Right.
So yeah, I think that unless, you know, the person has had, because you could have multiple negative experiences in a row, if you don't feel comfortable genuinely because of something the therapist is doing, versus if you just cannot be there due to stigma or resistance, I think that is something that you should definitely look at.
Right, sure, yeah. I mean, I've talked about this as well, but there's just this unrealistic expectation where you go in, and I literally have done this. You go in and you expect within a session that therapist A, has you fully figured out, and B, has the quick fix to get you better. There's just like, I've personally sat in a room and gone, all right, let's heal me. Let's do it in 20 minutes.
I wish we could do that. Like, I seriously wish that, you know, I could do that for other people, for myself. Like, how wonderful would that be?
Right.
You know, yeah. And people even approach like medicine like that, because they'll be like, I'm going to have this antidepressant and it's going to fix me. It's going to make me happy. Or, you know, I'm just going to go and this is going to completely take away my anxiety. But that isn't how it works. And you know, you don't go into one session and fix everything. You develop a relationship, and it is a commitment. It's a commitment you're making to yourself. It's a commitment that, you know, you are, it's an investment of emotional energy, finances, because it's expensive. It's investment towards yourself, knowing very well that this can work or this cannot work exactly the way that you want it. And in doing that, you know, we have to assess our goals and really understand what therapy does, what it is, and what it doesn't do. So many times I'll have people come in and say, well, tell me the answer, or this is a decision I want to make, help me make this decision, or tell me what I should do. And no therapist will tell you what to do. They won't tell you should go break up with this person. They're not going to tell you, this is how you should do your work, because that is actually your life. We cannot tell you what to do. In fact, if we tell you what to do, you go do it, you don't like it, you could sue us. Right. Nobody wants to do that. But at the same time, we will work on you in a way that you feel confident enough making that decision on your own. And so that takes time. And it doesn't just apply to that one decision. Then you're going to be using that strategy that you've learned in every decision in your life. So overall, you're becoming a more confident person, or overall, you're processing, you know, trauma that may have happened that is causing you to not make decisions. So it does change you. There's been nobody who's ever been to, you know, like a few sessions of therapy and said, I absolutely got nothing from it. It was absolute nonsense. There's nobody who does that. But at the same time, yeah, like, it doesn't mean you're going to be in therapy forever. It just means it's not going to be one or two sessions. If your goal is just to go in, ask the therapist a few questions, figure out very basic, like, you know, cognitive strategies, great. Yeah. One or two sessions, the therapist can tell you, here are some worksheets, here's something you can do. You can go and take it home and practice. But that's about it in terms of, you know, what you're going to get out of it. But if your goal is, I want to become a different person, or I want my anxiety to go away, or I want my depression to like be managed, I want this, I want that, I want to develop confidence, these things don't happen in 1 or 2 days. Because if they did, you would have already done it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you would have done it, and there wouldn't be such a big issue in society.
Yeah, totally. It would not.
Because it'd be like, oh, I actually have the fix, just like that. Mm-hmm. You talking about that actually, oh my goodness, brings me back to my therapy sessions with the one that really worked. Because I went in expecting her to react the way I was expecting her to react. Mm-hmm. And so I would tell her stories, or I'd be like, I'm about to make this decision, just like you said. And she would sit there freaking blank faced. And I was like, can you just tell me I'm an idiot? Like, please. Like, I was expecting it. Or I was expecting her to be like, yeah, you know what? Screw that person. You're right. But it was never the case. She was just like, all right, why do you feel that way? I'm like, man, what? So the first couple days, first couple sessions, I was always like, what is wrong with this lady? I was like, why is she not, you know, on my side or against me? And then later on, when you start to, they basically, what she did was she just gave me the ability to actually sit and think. Because I think my mind had been racing for so long that I was never given the opportunity to kind of sit down and map out my thought process. She kind of gave me that chance.
Yeah. I'm so glad that you have that.
Oh, thank you. I am too. Because this show wouldn't be here.
Yeah, you're right. And you know, that is precisely the difference between going to a friend versus going to a therapist. Your friend is probably going to, you know, tell you what to do, or is going to make, you know, judge you or not, or it's going to be like, okay, yeah, well, let's make this decision together. But there's a big difference. I'm not saying that friends are useless. Friends are amazing. I mean, they are your main support system outside of therapy, but that cannot replace what you do.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Now, I wanted to talk about art therapy, because I've actually surprisingly never heard of art therapy. I might have, but I don't recall. Now, what got you into art therapy? Like, what? Because I know you do the narrative therapy already, but how did you branch off into art?
So art therapy, I myself didn't know that it was a thing before I read about it. And before, you know, I was already working with art as therapy personally, because, you know, I always found it easy to express myself and things like that through any sort of a creative medium. But then when I was looking up programs to go to, I saw, because my program was a dual degree, it was in counseling psychology and art therapy. I thought, okay, that's cool. I mean, even if I don't figure out what that is or where that fits into my life, at least I'm going to be a counseling psychologist. So I have both of these. And so when I was in class, it blew my mind. It just blew my mind on how, you know, and it's not that, okay, you create a picture and great, you feel good. It is so, I can't even find the word. I remember my program director saying, it's like a magic work. It's like a miracle work.
Oh yeah.
It's okay. It's basically a language that transcends, you know, talk therapy, in a way that when we're talking, we're using one part of our brain, the part that does your, you know, thoughts and cognition and things like that. But when we're working with art, you are working from a different part of your brain that is creative, that gives you a chance to break the pattern of thinking a certain way. So it forces your neurons to fire a different way and increases brain plasticity. What that would mean is it just basically makes your, if there's like a dough and it's hard clay, you add water and it becomes more flexible. So it's kind of like that it helps you make your brain a bit more flexible so that all of the things you're talking about seem to sink in a bit more. Or you can go to places and emotions that you can't go to just talking with words, because we are so used to talking ourselves out of things. Or, you know, even if you're feeling angry, we say, oh no, it's okay, I'm fine. So we are so used to, with words can trick us, or we can use words to our own benefit. But with art, when you're working with a different medium, you don't know what's coming. And when I say that you don't know what's coming, it's in you, you don't know what's coming. And, you know, mind you don't have to be an artist for this at all. Like, it's like a skilled artist, I mean. Someone who has never, ever worked with an art medium can do this. Because it means that we work with symbols, with shapes, with metaphors, with colors, different materials, and to bring whatever's going on inside, outside, onto paper or whatever we're working with, and then you can start to have a relationship with it. So you may not know what you're feeling like inside, you might not have a word to put on it, but then through, you know, because this is a whole other trained skill thing, through a certain few, you know, questions we ask you, and we ask you to put something on paper, you are going to put it very raw as whatever's coming out. And then that is what you're feeling. And so we can have, we've given it some sort of a shape. And so you can have a relationship with it, or talk, or, you know, figure out more things from there.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
and it's a bit complicated like that when I say it like that. But yeah, how does that sound to you?
No, that sounds awesome. I mean, well, the thing is, like, you kind of mentioned it, was that sometimes when you're feeling something, you don't even know what to label it, or you don't even have the knowledge of that specific emotion to even go, I'm feeling this. So that's when this stuff, I'm assuming, would come into play, is that, okay, I know what I'm feeling, I know what I'm going through, don't really know how to say it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, totally. And this is a language you can use with anyone who's, you know, right from a like a kid or a toddler, more like play and art, all the way up to like basically, yeah, till the anybody at any age, because we learn to develop, you know, symbol and like associate things with metaphors right from like say 8, 6, 7. So it becomes quite easy in that sense for, you know, art therapists to pull something out that talk isn't being able to pull out. Also many times, you know, our brain will conceal trauma, so we'll forget that things have happened to us. Very normal, very natural, it's a coping process. And then art will help us get to that feeling that we experienced without actually talking about that particular incident or trauma. And yeah, it helps to open up a lot more.
How does that, like neurologically, how does that open up things that your words can't?
So that's a great question. So so our body remembers, even though, you know, logically, like, or our brain is going to forget the details and this and that of what's happened. Your body will still remember pain, or not necessarily even pain, just like a feeling from before. If whatever has happened in the past is not impacting your life at all today, or, you know, your brain has completely, you know, looped that memory out of your system, and you grow up to be a fully functioning adult, again, you have no, you probably wouldn't even come to therapy because you wouldn't notice any impact of it. But if you're coming in, that means there is some sort of an impact that that thing is happening, having on your life today. So it's coming out whether in, you know, in your relationships, or it's coming out through the way you communicate, the way you work, the way you treat yourself. And that's our opening. And so going from there, we work on feelings and not the thoughts that we have. And it, like with art, once we start recognizing what that feeling is or where it's coming from, you know, we can backtrack it into, you know, why the reason why I'm doing everything I'm doing is probably to avoid this, avoid feeling this way. Because when I did feel it the first time in my life, or when it, you know, it was super overwhelming, it was really bad. And it makes sense why no kid should experience that. And so I will do everything in my power to stay away from this. So logically, we don't remember what happened, but our body will still remember that feeling lonely hurts, or our bodies will still remember that, you know, being depressed is a really bad place to be in, or being anxious feels nauseous to us. So our body still picked up and still will give us, people will actually have PTSD, or like people will have flashbacks from things that they didn't even know happened. Or they like naturally grow up, you know, maintaining a distance from certain people, or they'll naturally grow up not feeling uncomfortable in certain places, and, you know, all of those things. But that's because our senses and our body has stored that information. But yeah, but we may not be able to put words together to describe what happened.
Man, it's so, that stuff is so fascinating to me, because it's just, I don't even know how to explain why it's so fascinating. Maybe I just need a piece of paper to draw why it's fascinating to me, because I have the words for it. but it's interesting, right? Like, when kids are growing up, like in kindergarten and everything, they're always drawing, or they're always doing something with crayons and markers. And sometimes they'll draw a whole story on a piece of paper, and how they're feeling, like the ways they express themselves. It's all on that paper, or something that happened at home. It's interesting that we kind of get away from that. And I wanted to ask you, like, when you're dealing with people from 15 all the way up to, you said, like, 65 or 67.
Yeah.
Like, is there ever any hesitancy, or kind of like, oh, this is childish? Is there ever that reaction when you're like, okay, here, let's draw this out?
Mm-hmm. Like from clients, like when they think that, okay, why? Oh yeah. Like 80% of the time, there's very few people who will be okay with it when I give them a paper and I say, oh, okay, that thing you're feeling, can you draw that for me? Because first they're like, what, are you an art teacher? What's going on? but yeah, they do. And then I don't actually approach it with people that I think will have resistance towards it until we have developed a trusting or a safer relationship, so that they're able to try new things. There's, because we all, you know, we hold on to our coping so strongly because it feels safe to us. So it takes a lot of time for us to do something new. And so once I've reached that place in our relationship, it's then that I start introducing it in session. And once people, you know, notice it and they find something from it, then it just blows their mind. It really blows. It blows my mind too, till date, no matter how many times I work with it. It'll always take them to a different place, a deeper place than, you know, before. And we start small. So I won't just throw them out in the deep end and then, you know, address something really, really big. We start small. I see where, you know, their comfort with it, and we go from there. And if I have somebody coming in and laughing about it and just being like, yeah, I'm not going to do that, then they're not ready. And I respect that. And I say, well, okay, well, this is not what works for you. What does work for you? Until then, we can get to that place. And, you know, they find some sort of a benefit in it. And that's the best part about having multiple, like, approaches in terms of, like, talk therapy, art therapy, you know, even play therapy and stuff like that.
Right. Yeah. Now let's assume that every client that you have or every person that comes in is okay with it. Do you think that everyone could benefit from something like art therapy?
Yes, I 100% think that they could. Because you know, they don't necessarily have to understand the full process in order to be on board. Because, like, if I sit here and I describe it to somebody, they might not know because they've never experienced it. I think it could benefit everyone.
Right. Is there a way for people listening at home or anything? Like, obviously, it's completely different when you're sitting with a professional. But let's say they're listening and they're like, hey, that actually doesn't sound like a bad idea. Is there a way for them at home to kind of conduct their own self art therapy session, like at home experiment or anything?
That's a great one. But I'm thinking maybe I wouldn't call it art therapy. I'll just say that, yes, they can work therapeutically with art. I know that that's a very tiny difference, but it's a big difference, because when, you know, again, it's that education piece about saying that I'm going to be my own therapist, right, versus going to therapy. But yeah, if you're sitting at home and you want to experience how you can be connected with art in a therapeutic way, I would just say take, you know, like any blank piece of paper and even just think of like one feeling, or what kind of, like an art journal. So you know how people write a diary or a journal at the end of the day? You can just literally just sit and draw out what your day looked like, or draw like a feeling. Or even if you don't really want to sit and, you know, put like do a journal style, you can put a YouTube video on, like, say, beginner painting lesson, or beginner like anything that feels easy enough for you to do and enjoyable enough. And just get those things together, whether it is clay, whether it's you know, paints, whether it's just pencil drawing, and give yourself 30 minutes to sit and just experience that. Unless you're very stressed about what the result is going to look like. Again, this is not something you're going to show to anyone. Right. So we're taking away that pressure of it being, you know, it needs to look a certain way. When you are engaging with these materials, you are going to naturally feel relaxed, or you're naturally going to settle into a different part of your brain, which is creative. And you're going to let the part of your brain that constantly keeps thinking, you know, you're going to let that part rest for some time, and you will feel a little bit of a shift. So that's what we call art as therapy. And the other one is art in therapy, which is more, you know, if I give you a directive and I say, do this and do that. But art as therapy is, you know, just experiencing the process of creating art. If you feel like it has even a little bit of an impact on you, then definitely you might be more drawn to it than others. You might benefit from it. If you just want to unload an emotion as well, you can pick a color that you think, like, say I'm super angry. I pick a color that I think signifies anger to me. Maybe I pick an orange or a red or something. I take that and I fill the whole page with red. That's still me giving a physical form to what I'm feeling and associating that with the color and putting it out there in front of me. And I'm releasing it in some sort of a way.
Right. Oh man, so interesting. I love everything about this. I wish we had more time, Shivani, but we're nearing the end of the episode. I got to have you back on, because there's so many questions I want to ask you about art therapy, changes, all of that stuff. But before we let you go, obviously I wanted to give you the time to shout out what you do. So for the people listening, like, what, where can they find you? What's your company? Like, all of, just shout everything out. This is your time to shine.
Thank you so much. And yeah, I would love to keep chatting with you. I love that you're doing this, especially as someone who's been a former athlete. You're male, you've gone through your own journey. I cannot thank you enough. And I'm sure at least all of the people I've met, my clients, especially who are male, they would be grateful that someone is out there doing this. Yeah, means a lot. And so where people can find me is, so I'm Shivani Agarwal. I'm a registered clinical counselor in British Columbia in Canada. I work around the world, like through online sessions as well as, you know, physically in our studio / therapy space here in Vancouver. My team and myself, if somebody's looking to, you know more about mental health resources, I can just give you my website and then you can go there and you can even just look me up by name and you'll find the Wellness Center. We have a team of people and they all, you know, work with me, supervised by me. And at the same time, the biggest thing that, you know, I wanted to bring forward today was that we started Yearn Store, which is a store that has everyday sustainable, like, self-care items that'll help you hydrate, that'll help you rest. We are still building on it to include more and more everyday things on it that are going to help people bring wellness in an easy way into their life. The biggest deal about this store is that part of the proceeds are donated towards mental health organizations that we work with continuously to advocate for mental health awareness, mental health education in schools. And so if you're buying a product, you're not just taking care of yourself, you're also taking care of everybody, you know, people who don't really have a voice to advocate for this. And so one of the products is right here. As I said, it's a tumbler. It's super high quality, but I've been drinking way more water than I used to, sitting in sessions with clients and then just sipping on it. It's got a beautiful infuser. I know that you have one as well. So yeah, and we have weighted blankets. We have basically things that you might need to take care of yourself and make that an enjoyable process. Not saying that any product is going to fix your mental health. Absolutely not. It will help you care for yourself. It will educate you and it will help you deal with life easier. But in order to process what you're going through, you need to go to therapy.
Right. Absolutely. And I'll put those links down below. Again, I thank you so much, Shivani, for coming on. I had a great time.
Thank you so much. Same.
And to all my listeners, I will see you guys next time.